Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the highly anticipated return to Westeros. Hello, hello, and welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. It's me, I am your host and Maester of Ceremonies, Jamie East, and joining me this week for our regular and final roundup of all things House of the Dragon for this season anyway, is as always journalist, writer and the Larys-encrusted tippy toes of the Queen Consort, Chris Mandel. Darling, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good. What do you think?
I was shocked when I joined the call and saw you in your finest. I knew you had long hair. I didn't realise it was quite so long when it was out of your top knot.
I didn't really have to. It's like it got torn out of the eBay packaging like literally seconds before we started recording. So I've not had time to kind of like do any of the fancy kind of like, that's what they do, isn't it? Like,
the
I know
braided,
nothing about hair.
It's all
that
braided,
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've only been wearing it 5 minutes. I already have a deep respect and admiration for any actor that has to wear a wig for any period of time, because this is disgrace. It's horrible.
It looks good quality, though. You know, look like you've been shampooing and conditioning that hair.
You will note I've not lit my DS and Durga candle for fear that it may well be the last thing that I ever do, though. It's pretty flammable.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and not watching it, do go and have a look on the Dragoncast YouTube channel, where you see a grown man kind of unashamedly auditioning for season two of House of the Dragon. Ryan, if you're watching, call me babes. I'm here. I could be a Targaryen, I'd like to think. Are we missing any major characters?
I think if you do a major time jump again in season two and you cover one eye, I'm thinking Aemon.
Well, we don't need to cover one eye. All I need to do is just pop one out and pop us, I'm going to say Sapphire. Is it Sapphire?
Yes, Sapphire.
Right, enough of that. We've got so much to cover.
We've got loads to cover.
Just a quick reminder to like, comment and share this episode if you're listening to us on Spotify or on Apple or on any of your podcast apps. Or if you're watching on YouTube, do feel free to leave us a comment, to like. We'll go through, we'll have a little bit of a scan through all of the comments and all of the emails we've been getting, because you know what? We've had flipping tons. And once we've finished talking about the episode, we'll give a quick update as to what we think we're going to be doing with Dragoncast in the terrifying chasm of time that we've got facing us now between now and season two. But first, let's get stuck into our reactions for House of the Dragon, season one, episode 10, The Black Queen. I'm going to come to you first, Chris. Give me your initial guttural, emotional reaction to what you felt about the episode.
It was just intense and heartbreaking. I thought for the most part, this is quite a slow, this is a character study of an episode, like seeing Rhaenyra stepping up. It felt like an accompaniment to last week's episode, didn't it? The Blacks, the Greens, each getting their own episode, dealing with the death of Viserys. But yeah, my reaction was, I thought, oh, this is quite sort of measured. And then we had that incredibly tense, brutal fight scene in the skies above Shipbreaker Bay. It's just sort of mind-blowing. I mean, maybe I will caveat at this point, I knew Luke was not long for this world.
Did you use that? Is that a book thing?
It's just because I've interviewed Emma Darcy for something.
Okay.
And it's not out yet, so I can't really say any more. But we had to talk a little bit about where the show kind of ends. And it was really difficult because I didn't really want to have it spoiled, but I knew one of the kids died, and I actually thought it was going to be the baby. I didn't quite know it was going to be Luke. But as soon as we saw them willing to go on these sort of messenger trips, I just felt like that's when I started to get this feeling in my chest that something was going to go wrong. And that reveal when Luke lands at Storm's End and he sees there's already Vhagar is just hanging out in the car park, I was like, oh shit, this is just going to go so wrong, isn't it?
I must say that's where the back of my neck started to get a little bit cold. It was, anyway, we are jumping way, way ahead.
We are. But that was my reaction. That was my reaction, was really intense.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of similar. I remember pausing it at one point thinking, holy shit, I'm like 45 minutes in. This is near the end.
Yeah, me too.
I was like, oh my God, I don't want this. A, I was like, I don't want this to end. But I was like, B, I was like, something's got to happen, right? Because this seems... things had already happened, but it felt quite, like you say, a character study, quite navel-gazy, and also quite slow. It did not feel, I think deliberately didn't feel like a traditional season finale for the vast proportion of it. It felt like an episode six or something like that.
They set up so much for next season. They set up loads. There's just a sense, because there was bits in this episode of like, different parts of different kingdoms, different houses, a sense that the remaining characters will have quite a lot of roles to play. I think we're going to get a real sense of scope next year. And I think this first season needed to set it up quite intimately. And that is exactly what Game of Thrones did. You know, it was really self-contained. And I remember even like, because I'm like already sort of very much a House of the Dragon defender. I know a lot of people prefer Game of Thrones, fine. But I think it's worth remembering that even the second season of Game of Thrones, it was quite slow. After Ned died, people talk about Ned getting his head chopped off as it was like
a lot of journeys,
the show was never the same.
People were traveling.
There was a lot of Jamie Lannister sitting in a cell, or there was a lot of, that second season, it's important to remember, it's a real build up to the big thing, which was the Red Wedding in the third season. So, you know, I loved it. It's a really exciting premise to go into next season. I think there's so much to talk about. So yeah, should we start at the start?
Let's delve into it.
Let's go.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So the episode opened with Lucerys at the war table at Dragonstone, stroking Driftmark. Not a euphemism, but he was actually just stroking Driftmark. I loved that. Yeah. I was wondering, in the trailer that we saw last week, when we saw the kind of glowing, kind of like, almost like a gamer's table, it struck me. It was like proper kind of like Comic-Con dream prop. There will be people already building one of those tables using LEDs and stuff, but I did wonder how it lit, and it was just a load of IKEA tea lights underneath it, which I thought was quite sweet.
Please don't try and recreate this at home though, because it could cause fires. If you're not using like obsidian stone to build it out of, you could set your dining table on fire.
But you're gonna fail.
Really loved that. I thought it was really powerful. And I think it really mirrored the intro for me, where all that blood is running through those rivets. You know, it's the map lights up in that episode, which is a really nice visual.
And also, like you said, it immediately kind of subconsciously made us think of all of the other houses that we knew of in Thrones, most of them anyway, like the Tullys and all of that lot. Yeah. And immediately started expanding the world of Westeros beyond Driftmark, King's Landing and Dragonstone, which is where pretty much all of this has been.
Yeah.
And without knowing it, we were listening to Luke's kind of goodbye, really, or at least a kind of, I thought all through this, now that we know now we know how it ended, we'll go back and watch it. I've not had time to watch it for a second time yet, but the relationship between Rhaenyra and Luke was lovely. There was that little stroke of the little finger.
What I really liked though was that, like, you know, you look back on season one, Rhaenyra wasn't really shown how to do any of this by Viserys. Like, he put the pressure on her to be his heir. He didn't really sort of guide her. And even in this episode, we saw Rhaenyra having her little team, sending them out. Like, she's talked to Jace as well, and I think a couple of episodes ago, about like, don't worry about learning High Valyrian. You just need to be like a good ruler and stuff like this. So we got to see her sort of raising those boys really well and trying to like impart onto them like how to be a good ruler and a good leader. And it was obviously just heartbreaking given that, you know, Luke doesn't come home from that trip. It's sweet. They're sweet kids. And it's interesting just how it's sometimes the children that pay the price for these like adult wars or these adult arguments.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because there are mirrors, again, you know, between Luke and Aemond, really, is that they both really want to follow their family name. They want to be the ones doing it, and the brothers, not so much.
Yeah.
Am I right? Is that right? Am I right? Was Luke the heir? Was he the oldest or the younger?
Luke is the younger one.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So there's that similarity there where they were both... Yeah. Kind of really earnestly trying to prove something to their folks, like learning High Valyrian, practicing their sword fighting, and Aemond clearly probably fit to be king far more than Aegon, and neither of them quite getting it. I'm sure the older Westerosi psychologist would have a field day with that. What do we think about the way that Rhaenys arrived and kind of broke the news to Rhaenyra? And then also, I found it quite weird. I didn't really know where Rhaenys was going throughout a lot of this episode. I thought when we saw her escaping, she was like, right, fuck you, I'm going to go and wreak havoc, I'm going to cause a war, I've got to... But actually, she was still quite standoffish with Rhaenyra, wasn't she? Obviously, yeah. She still thinks that Rhaenyra killed her son. She's... But I thought it was quite an interesting dynamic between the pair of them.
Yeah, last episode we thought Rhaenys fled King's Landing and was going to sort of join Rhaenyra with no problems. And actually what we found out this episode was that she delivered the news out of loyalty to Viserys.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, you are his heir. They have usurped the throne. And then it took most of the episode for Rhaenys to sort of come around and fight for the cause. But I think, you know, she's very hard to read because she's been burned by this before. Her family is in tatters from aligning themselves with the Targaryens. And she's not quite sure where she wants to plant her flag. But I think it sort of became clear after Corlys came back from his 6-year reconnaissance mission. It was sort of cemented that, like, they've pursued the crown themselves, certainly he has. Over the years, that's cost them a lot, but this is not a pursuit of power. This is standing by their family and doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And in no uncertain terms, like, the Hightowers have usurped the crown. This is what really triggered Rhaenyra when she found out.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, as soon as she starts hearing the news, as soon as she finds out her father's died, she gets these pains. And it's the injustice of it. Because I think for Rhaenyra, it's really hard to get her head around. Why have they taken it? Alicent said at that final dinner, you will make a great queen. So why has she sat her son on the throne? So it's really, it becomes clear that, like, it's an injustice. It's a really powerful fuck you. And it's something that they need to deal with if they want to move forward and if they want to survive.
Yeah, Rhaenyra's response was pretty visceral, wasn't it? And like you say, like, manifested itself in the losing of the baby or the stillbirth of their child. And
yeah,
which was...
I did not think there was going to be another birth scene this season.
I mean, it was, I've got a pretty strong stomach for stuff. That was about as close to the edge as I think I've ever got from just not being able to watch. It was pretty funny.
Am I right in saying, like, because I could barely watch it, but the baby had was missing a skull. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
It was like,
it was clearly never going to reach, never going to be born alive.
Yeah. But so it's way too early. The shock sends her into labor, basically.
I think she knew as well. I think that's why she refused the help of the sisters.
The midwives,
yeah.
I read online that baby was her only daughter. That was a girl.
Oh, man.
That was stillborn. And I think that's so interesting that she's now lost a mother, father, son, and daughter by the end of this episode. And also, I think the symmetry of her mother dying, trying to give birth to a son, Rhaenyra surviving, although she has a stillborn daughter, is really interesting. And I think the fact that this moment that she was waiting her whole life for, which was your dad's died, you need to ascend the throne, her body is fighting this other battle, which is she's going into labor. And she's come away from it.
I feel faintly ridiculous talking about this, kind of wearing this wig, actually. So I am going to have to remove this because I need to put on my headphones and my glasses because I can't see anything or hear anything. But do carry on, Chris, please.
So I thought by the end of this episode, Rhaenyra has gone through what her father and her mother have simultaneously, you know. And it's just a really, really fascinating character study that she's survived what killed her mother, but also she's lost a child, or she's lost two technically, which is what her parents have both gone through. And it's interesting, again, there was a funeral for the child.
Yeah.
Which we had one in the first episode, which Viserys watched his own child's funeral. And we see Rhaenyra do that. So we're seeing her in quite a condensed period go through these major character beats.
They don't muck around either, do they? She was back on her feet. You know, I know there's not much maternity leave in Westeros, is there?
One of the big injustices, though, is when she's supposed to do her duty as heir, she is incapacitated because as women, the society expects them to just, you know, get in the stirrups and put out some kids. And it's so interesting watching her kind of conquer that in a way. And refuse to be defined by that and get back out there. I thought Emma Darcy was just amazing in this episode.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, the awards judges have got a right fight on their hands between Paddy, Emma and Olivia. It's crazy. Whether or not I think they all go for principal actor or supporting actor, that'd be a difficult one. Arguably, Paddy could probably go for principal actor, maybe. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, I think so.
We're winding just slightly a bit because one thing in the scene where Rhaenys broke the news to Rhaenyra, which I thought was really interesting, was Daemon's reaction and the relationship between Daemon and Rhaenyra throughout this whole episode was starkly different to the one that we left them with when we saw them leaving King's Landing. We saw them leaving King's Landing as this kind of like slightly cool couple who were kind of like had each other's backs and were pretty unified and were together through thick and thin. And yet we meet Daemon looking pretty bloodthirsty and pretty angry. And again, I think it was Rhaenys that said later on, you know, the reason that she chose Rhaenyra was because she'd seen her being the only one that wasn't, she was surrounded by men desperate for a war, or she said something like that, didn't she? And Daemon was pretty thirsty for a war in the same as Corlys was with Rhaenys earlier on as well. So maybe there were some similarities there, but Daemon felt kind of out of whack this episode, didn't he? What did you think?
Yeah, it was kind of a reminder that he's not an aspirational person. I think we've sort of got to know him quite well this season. He started out as very violent. I mean, he's constantly been violent, let's be honest. But like, there's been moments where I think we've seen a softer side of Daemon. And I think Matt Smith plays the duality so well that sometimes you find yourself being like, oh, he's great. I love Daemon. And then it's a reminder this episode that he can be incredibly violent to his own wife and niece. And also that I think he's really going to struggle with his wife being queen, because we can see like she's making the decisions and he responds to her. And that's so interesting to me that this is something Matt Smith had to do on The Crown as Prince Philip. He had to defer to a sort of revolutionary woman in charge. But the big thing that we should talk about is when she reveals the Song of Ice and Fire to him, which he didn't know about. And his reaction to that was quite violent, wasn't it?
Yeah, so he grabbed her by the throat. And do you think immediately his anger was because he hadn't been told that?
Yeah, I think there's two things. I think the immediate anger is, I've always been overlooked by Viserys because he never told me about this, right? Whereas Rhaenyra knew when she was like 14.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first thing. But I think he sees Rhaenyra and he goes, I thought you were a dragon. You're sounding like Viserys. I've just basically married my own brother. Like you're talking about prophecies and dreams, and this is not Daemon's world whatsoever. He's like, dragons are what we need. We've got nukes that we can conquer them. And Rhaenyra's going, I heard about this dream that's really important and we shouldn't do that. You know, Rhaenyra is very Shakespearean, this curse of knowing something and no one believing you. And I thought it played out really well. I think she's trying to figure out how to be a Targaryen, but she's also trying to figure out how to bring the realm together. And she can't bring the realm together and unite them if she burns all of them down. And that's sort of what happens in Game of Thrones, right? With Daenerys.
Yeah. Well, she says she didn't want to rule over a country of ash and bones, wasn't it? Or something like that.
It's very clear from the writers, a nod to what will happen, which is that Daenerys does get the throne, but literally the walls of the throne room are completely destroyed and there's no people around and there's so much ash that it looks like it's snowing. And, you know, it's like, you don't want to rule that. And so, yeah, I thought that stuff about the dreams was interesting. I mean, somebody mentioned online, because I had a bit of a browse this morning after watching the episode, all the way back in episode 3, Viserys and Alicent are talking. And to Viserys, dreams are more powerful than dragons. There is a quote that I'm going to just bring it up now. He says, you know, what is the power of a dragon in the face of a prophecy? You know, Viserys sort of feels like the prophecies are so much more powerful than dragons. Whereas in this episode, we get the flip side, which is, no, dreams can't help us win this war. We need firepower. We need, you know, to fight.
Wow. Wow, I love that. The scripts, the writing's been fantastic, hasn't it? It's been the words have been beautiful.
There's a scene I really liked at the funeral where Derek brings the crown. I thought that was really powerful they feel like they're fighting this losing battle that no one believes them. And to have this young man who's not related to them go, like, I've stole the crown for you. That was quite powerful, wasn't it?
It was a good moment. Also, it looked great on her as well, didn't it?
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the crowns last week, but Aegon the Conqueror's crown is this heavy, ugly, melty, sort of roughly hewn thing.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it's made out of lava, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and then the one that Viserys had, that Rhaenyra now has, it's got all of the kingdoms on the sides, and it's about unity, and it's a little bit less ornamental. It's quite simple. And I just love that, what they're using with costuming and detailing in that way. Yeah. So that was really powerful. Rhaenyra starts to feel that people will rally around me. I've got a good cause. And what the Hightowers have done is an abomination.
Mm. And then we get the briefest of Otto moments on the bridge. And again, mirroring back, there were so many callbacks to scenes that we've already seen in this season as well. There's before we even get to the actual last shot, we get almost a replay of Otto arriving at Dragonstone to confront Daemon, and Rhaenyra swooping in to kind of...
I loved it.
To piss on their violence chips. And
yeah.
I mean, I thought Otto was going to get it then. I did. I thought Daemon was just going to strike him down.
Yeah. I mean, they should have taken him hostage. Come on. Like, this is the thing that they're all about. We can settle this as adults. That's what they think.
Yeah. And the demands that Otto read out, or really got a good memory as well, was that it revealed to Rhaenyra that some of the houses that she thought that had pledged their allegiance to her were wavering. I think the Winterfell was mentioned, or certainly the Baratheons and the Tullys. Am I right in thinking? I've again not a chance to watch this twice, but there was the Riverlands, the Arryns, there was all sorts, wasn't there?
He said you're going to need more than promises to fight, basically. That, like, yes, they pledged allegiance to you 20 years ago. Some of those people, I mean, this came up last week too, some of the men that made those pledges are dead. You're going to need to win them to your cause, essentially, and you haven't done that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are on the back foot, because I think, sometimes this has come up in Game of Thrones before, where people think their name alone and the principle of the matter will settle things. But, you know, she is still a woman in a man's world, and that's going to be the great test, is how loyal are these people to you, actually? And you've already got the Hightowers scheming, they've already crowned Aegon, you know, they've already done all this. But Otto, he served her with some terms that were that she can stay on Dragonstone and that she'd have to swear allegiance. I think the two youngest of her boys, which are Aegon the Third and Viserys the Younger, were offered positions at court as cupbearers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, this is very, this is essentially, you hear the term ward used as well, which is what Theon Greyjoy was to the Stark, a ward.
Yeah.
It's essentially a political prisoner where they're like, you can work for us. You know, we'll probably marry you off to someone.
Yeah.
But like, if anything goes sour, you're dead. It's really brutal. And that's how it kind of felt.
And Daemon's response was, I'd rather feed my children to dragons. And Rhaenyra ripped the hand off Otto's chest and called him called him a fucking traitor, which was great. There was also the moment Otto delivered, I'm sure most of you got this, but the it wasn't a note that that Otto delivered to Rhaenyra. It was the page from the book that the pair of them, that Alicent was reading around the weirwood tree, wasn't it?
Yeah, right? And like, I think it was literally episode one.
And Rhaenyra ripped it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Rhaenyra, I can't remember the specific reason that Rhaenyra ripped it out. I'm sure it will mean something.
Alicent was trying to teach her about, because, and this is something that's not that clear in the show, but Alicent is like really up on, you know, ancient Westeros history and everything. And this book was about Nymeria, who like was a warrior and a conqueror and this kind of thing. And Rhaenyra just wanted to like eat cake and, you know, fuck around. And so she kind of ripped it out quite deferentially, I think. So I thought that was really clever, but the Hightowers are all about like savvy PR, right? And I think they, you know, the optics of that are very smart. Give her this note. It doesn't actually, it's not a written note saying, please don't fight me, would have done one thing. But Alicent sends kind of an empty sentiment in a way. I don't know if that's an oxymoron, because maybe you can't have an empty sentiment, but a gesture that should be significant.
Well, I think it was just a trying to remind her of their friendship without giving anything up.
And it worked, right? Like, she sort of did seem quite stunned by that.
Yeah, and there was a little tear, and after that was when she said, I'll let you know what I'm up to in the morning. So does that mean that Otto is still knocking around?
I presume he's gone back, because it's so close. It's so close to King's Landing. The thing that I really like, the detail that I don't know if this is in the books or whatever, but the sigil on Otto's ship was a three-headed dragon, which is the normal Targaryen sigil, but it was green. So the new generation of Alicent and Viserys' kids, they've taken the green of House Hightower and the dragon sigil, and they've made a green dragon, which I think is really, really cool. And again, I think they were quite insulted when they heard that this boat was coming. They were like,
they don't fuck around with the rebranding, do they? You know, there's a whole team of Hightowers on Photoshop just ready, aren't they? They're just kind
I think they have a Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen at court with a seashell motif here and a bit of, you know, goat's breast stars paint.
Seven-pointed stars there. I see seven-pointed stars there. Paint those fucking dragons green.
I don't want to see any black and red, okay? Yeah. I want
Where's
sage.
Where's Andy? If I had an Emma.
I want emerald. I want moss. I don't want any fucking red. That's another. We talked with Matt Edmondson about spin-offs.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted the vet. I want, you know, what I now want is the interior designer.
Just like the weariness. It's like, where the fuck? Should we destroy all of these dragons? No, just. Tell you what, just go and put them in the cupboard around the corner. They'll never know that, because you never know when we might need them again. Put them with the Christmas decorations.
We want to paint one of the dragons because they've got too many that are gold. They're like, we need a blue one. Just start painting it like the dogs at Crufts. But no, really interesting. You know, Rhaenyra just refuses for the longest part of this episode to turn this into a war, and thinks that she can just diplomat her way out, because that's what Viserys did. He sort of buried his head a little bit.
And, you know, for the second time in this season, we came within a hair's breadth of peace, or a kind of peace. So, you know, if it hadn't been for Alicent tucking Viserys in and mishearing Aegon's dream, we wouldn't be where we are now. And then secondly, if it hadn't been for what happened at the end, she'd have probably maintained that kind of peaceful route had Luke not been eviscerated.
I think the thing that really upset them both was that thing about your younger sons will take roles at court. I think that's the thing where, because I think Rhaenyra wants to rule because she thinks it's her duty. I don't think there's any point where anyone is actually interested in governing the country, right? It's the principle for the Hightowers and for Aegon and Aemon. Yeah. It's the principle. For Rhaenyra, it's, I have to see this prophecy through because that's what my dad wanted.
Yeah.
But like, the thing that is hanging over them, the thing that is forcing them into action is, are their children safe? Are they going to get slaughtered? And even if they're offered, look, you guys can stay on Dragonstone. We don't want it. It's shit. The threat is, but we're going to take two of your children. And I think that is what causes them to really think, we're not going to be safe. We're really not going to be safe. But then, you know, they stole the fucking throne. Like, what do they expect?
I know. It's weird, isn't it? The audacity of it, Chris, is that's right. Honestly, the audacity of Alison and Otto, just to kind of go, well, we've crowned Aegon now and loads of people saw it, so that's that.
Yeah, actually, they were a bit like, oh, you want to have the... Sorry, we just did a whole thing. Like, we had a sold out event at the Dragon Pit. Did you not hear?
He held a sword. There were people there. Yeah. It was the party. I mean, the invites have gone out.
They were like, we've got covered in Grazia. We were in the Evening Standard. Like, it's been everywhere. You know, did you not get invited?
It's been everywhere. Hate World.
But the thing that was really interesting was that Otto said to them, like, I'm going to see if we've got the quote. He's like, we had a coronation at the Dragon Pit. All the small folks saw it. They witnessed it. The sword, the crown, the banners. He was sort of really impressing on Rhaenyra. Like, we've done all the PR for this. Like, it's set in stone. And I think to a lot of the common folk, Rhaenyra she obviously didn't want to take the crown.
Yeah, they don't know. They've not seen the contract. They don't know the negotiations. It's just something she went back to Dragonstone. That was that. presumably half of them are dead now anyway.
Yeah. Didn't even get to use their goodie bags from the party. Exactly. Yeah, they were just crushed before they could get home.
Oh, the vouchers for acupuncture that you always get in those bags.
The tummy tea.
The tummy tea.
The one thing that come up in this episode that is quite a clear thing to mention is that Rhaenyra's team have way more dragons, right? The Greens have like three or four. Team Black have six or seven, I think. And then they've got all the wild ones.
Yeah, Daemon, there was the very kind of like pointed moment where it's just like, well, there's such and such, there's three of them. I've got the eggs in incubation. Yeah. They're the wild ones. There's such and such. Sea smoke is knocking around. So all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Who's going to ride them? Do we have more dragon riders than dragons at the moment?
We have more dragons than people that ride dragons. I actually have a list of...
Oh, go for it. If you've got a list. Yeah, do, please.
Let me go through the list. Okay. I actually wrote this down because I was like, this is going to be important.
Thank you. Thank you for doing some homework.
So, on the Greens, they have three adult dragons. Okay. Yeah. Aemon has Vhagar, the big lad.
Yeah.
Aegon has Sunfire, who I don't know if we've seen in the show.
I don't think I've seen
Sunfire. And no. Helena has a very appropriately named dragon called Dreamfire.
Ah.
On Team Black, Rhaenyra has Syrax.
Mm-hmm.
Daemon has Caraxes.
Yeah.
Rhaenys has Malice,
yep,
who obviously left the Dragon Pit last episode.
Yeah.
Jace has Vermax.
Yeah.
Luke has/had Arax.
Yeah.
And little baby Joffrey has a dragon called Tyraxes or Taraxes.
Right.
And
okay,
then we've got the Velaryon grandkids. Baela has a dragon called Moondancer. And Daemon says in the episode that there is Sea Smoke, Silverwing, and Vermithor, who are all in the Dragon Mount, which is the active volcano on the island. That's where they've got the eggs from. That's where Daemon goes in this episode. So where do they all, sort of, all the rabid ones hang out? So one of Daemon's daughters, obviously there's Baela and Rhaena. I can't remember the other one. I don't think she has a dragon. So there's one of those and he's claimed.
Yeah, because he went to test the waters. Does that not... I need to update my dragon lore. Presumably a Targaryen... Well, clearly a Targaryen who's not trying to claim a dragon can go up to a dragon and say hi to it without it kicking off.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised about that because I thought... First of all, you can't claim more than one dragon. Obviously, Daenerys had three, but she only rode one of them. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know if... But maybe he just wants to put a collar on it so that when his daughter wants to sort of claim it herself, she can.
There was something there, though. There was the great shot of the pupil in Daemon's eye.
Oh, I loved that, yeah.
Mirroring the dragon's eye, which was just brilliant, which made me think, oh, there's a connection. That's what they're trying to show, is that Daemon has managed to connect with this dragon too. I don't know, maybe, well, I get it. We'll 100%
find out.
They've
got loads, basically.
And they've got tons of the bloody things. But does every dragon need to have a dragon rider? I can't remember back in game. I think in Thrones...
Well, no, because Daenerys had three...
Daenerys only had her dragon, and then the other two were just part of the fleet, weren't they? They joined her and helped her.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a war, when both sides have got dragons, you need someone riding it. You need someone on it, basically. I don't think they'll sort of do their own thing. As we saw at the end of this episode, when they get a sniff of blood or they get their, you know, if they're in season or whatever, these guys don't listen. Even the experienced ones, when they've got a good bond. So, yeah, I presume next season we'll see a little bit more of, like, different people claiming dragons. One thing I'm just wondering about is, you know, we know that there are Targaryen bastards out there. So presumably maybe some of those will join. I mean, it'll be a while before that baby that we saw at the fighting pits last week is able to stand on his own two feet and wipe his ass. Never mind riding a dragon, but everyone counts in this. But the big thing is that they're outnumbered. And as we heard, they've got, it's actually quite easy for them to just like raise King's Landing to the ground if they wanted to.
Well, they worked it out, didn't they? There was that moment of map plotting where they realised actually, oh, this is a piece of piss, actually. We just need to...
I'll
tell you what, that involves Corliss, which we're going to talk about after the break. Don't go anywhere. We're going to go and have a quick word from our sponsors. You're listening to Dragoncast, Home of House of the Dragon, with me, Jamie Easton, Chris Mandel. And it's the final episode. We're discussing the finale of season one. And we're going to talk about that final scene. Back right after this.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Dragoncast, Home of the Dragon, with me, Jamie East, and Chris Mandel. Say hello, Chris Mandel.
Hello, Chris Mandel.
thanks very much for joining us. Don't forget to like and subscribe and comment on the YouTube channel if you're watching on YouTube. We just started talking about how the Team Blacks realized quite quickly that actually this could be a very quick war if they wanted it to be. They just, once Corlys Velaryon had given his backing to Rhaenyra, it was never really in any doubt that he was going to do that. I don't think he'd have kind of limped his way over to Dragonstone and immediately went to bed. A bit weird, wasn't it? You know, if you turn up at someone's house, it's a bit like, you know, when Tom Cruise turns up at Kelly McGillis's in Top Gun and asks to have a shower.
Yeah.
I've always found it to be quite weird. That was a bit weird for Corlys just to arrive and say, I'm just going to go to bed.
Yeah. Someone else's bed. It's like...
Yeah. 6 years away from your wife, mate. Don't get to bed.
Also,
and have a
I don't kit. Think they wash the I don't think they wash the sheets that often in Westeros. So I was a bit. I thought, oh
no. Anyway. So there was never really any doubt that Corlys was going to. I think we all had an inkling that was going to be Rhaenyra's path to war, wasn't it? With Corlys by her side. Did you presume that as well?
For the last few weeks he's been ill. He's been missing all season. We've been like, what is going on with the Stepstones? These bloody Stepstones. And it sort of turns out that he's not only sort of finished that war, but he's installed people to like, you know, run it, and sort of his own men are sort of there kind of keeping the peace. And now because they control that very narrow bit that goes into Blackwater Bay at King's Landing, they can basically cut off any supplies from the east to King's Landing. Yeah. So it's really strategic. It's obviously, it's paid off. I mean, it's been a long build up to the Triarchy, quite frankly. But yeah, I think Corlys joining the team is really interesting, because the thing that he's been doing all season is marrying his kids off to suit his family's need. And obviously now that both his kids are dead, well, we know one of them is having an absolutely wild time at the Pentos
raging
circuit
around
parties.
Yeah, exactly. Those Pentos phone parties getting absolutely hammered.
Seahorse sigil on his thong and just living his best life. So because his kids have died and he's got his granddaughters now, I think there's part of him that's like, I can't marry my way into a strategic allegiance. I'm going to have to just think about this a little bit differently. And yeah, he kind of stands by Rhaenyra and does his duty. And yeah, they've now got this amazing fleet, which is a huge advantage, because that means, again, they can go anywhere on the coast. They can sort of attack if they wanted to. So it's really, really interesting. It felt to me like all episode, the odds were against Rhaenyra. And then we get more and more clues that like, oh, you actually have got people behind you, which makes the sort of big twist towards the end, even more
delicious. Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Rather. Yes.
Yeah. I said heartbreaking. You went, yeah, loved it. More dead kids, please. That's officially quoting Jamie there.
But interesting. Did you notice that despite Rhaenys's allegiance, she was the only one not to bow to the queen?
I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. Just a lovely character detail, I think.
She had this knowing, kind of like, almost kind of like, don't push your fucking luck, love. On her face.
It was like, I'll surrender to you, but on my terms, right?
Yeah.
Like earlier in the episode, Daemon took two of the Kingsguard who were loyal to him. I think they were from the City Watch initially because they have the white cloaks, right? He took them outside and was like, swear your allegiance to me again and my dragon will eat you if you don't. That sort of thing won't work with Rhaenys, right? She knows like it suits everyone and the blacks for her to be there, and they're not gonna be dicks about it. So it's, I think the not bowing was a real power move, but yeah, you know, I wouldn't trust Rhaenys much. Like it's hard to know
there is a glint there, isn't there? There's a little glint.
I think what it is, like, I don't think she'd ever betray them. I think it's, she's so checked out that she's just like, look, I'm not playing this. Like, you know, I'm here, aren't I? Like, why do I have to bow?
Checked out's a good, it's like when you're a kid and you're dragged somewhere on a Sunday afternoon with your parents. It's like, I'll fucking come. I'll sit in the back of the car. Do not expect me to enjoy this. I will not partake in any chit chat.
Yeah.
I'll accept an ice cream, but I will not hold your hand.
Yeah. It's basically me. If I had to go to the, if my mum needed to get a haircut and I'd have to sit there and read like Bella from, 1999, think, look, I'm not happy. I'm here, aren't I?
Yeah.
I can't hear the conversation you're having because the blowers are on.
Yeah.
Don't make me join in. I'm too far away. I'm just reading, Bella. Yeah.
I mean, if you're listening, script writers, we could, if you need any gaps filling in with...
could really polish up some of these season two scripts.
Okay, so that takes care of about 50 minutes of a 1 hour and 10 minute show. I think it was about, it wasn't much longer than that. And you said you, as soon as the kids were sent on their messenger mission to House Baratheon and whatnot, that you started getting the fear.
Well, it's the line specifically, Lord Baratheon will be really happy to see you. I was like,
yeah. So there was the other, who was the other lord that wasn't much older than,
So that is Craegan Stark.
Craegan Stark, that's right.
Jace has gone there because he's a bit of a better flyer. He's going to the Eyrie first and then he'll go to Winterfell. So I guess we'll see that next season, but he's younger. Yeah. You know, us Northerners, we're canny, we're good crack. You know, we haven't got a stick up our ass like most of the people on this show.
Exactly.
So
that'll
be lovely, I think.
Yeah.
Lord Baratheon, Boros Baratheon, I think is a tough cookie.
And for those that can't remember, the Eyrie is where the Moondor lives. That was where
Arryn's really tall tower.
Yeah. And with the Moondor, where the little boy was suckling on his mother, aged 10 or sort of 12 or something like that. Yeah. Mummy, I want bitty. Yeah.
And I think, so we kind of got a hint, just again, this is what I love about, what I'm excited about next season is that, like, House Arryn have married into the Targaryens. The Baratheons have married into the Targaryens at various points. So there's factions there, there's blood there. And the key is to try and sort of win them over. And then the Starks, they're such loyal followers of oaths. They never break an oath. So the idea is that in principle, they will support Rhaenyra because they're generally out the way. They don't tend to come south and get involved in stuff. So they'll back her in principle.
I kind of think is that if you're a storyteller, if you're a scriptwriter, if you were George R.R. Martin, I'm not sure viewers will accept the Starks as anything other than fucking righteous dudes.
I'm really intrigued.
I'm intrigued as well. Maybe that's what the rug will be pulled from under our feet. And actually, Ned Stark's great, 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 great grandfather is an absolute fucker that was like, that just out for himself. But I just, I'm not sure an audience would accept nasty Starks. Luke arrived at Storm's End and there was a storm. The mechanics of riding a dragon in that weather really were great. Really, I really felt cold and miserable and wet. And I have to say, for all of the kind of like architecture of the saddle and the mechanics of the handles and the reins and everything, you'd put a fucking canopy or something up, wouldn't you?
Honestly, like one of those Fred Flintstones roofs on the cars, yeah, or something.
Something that'd be, there must be a kind of Targaryen equivalent of a cagoule, surely.
Well, we've also said before, they've got these ornate handles and they're not like, what if we attach him with some sort of like thread, like tie a knot around, do you know what I mean? Like tie him on. I mean, it wouldn't have saved Luke.
No, they would not have saved Luke. They could wear a cloak. They could wear cloaks for murder, but not for rain.
I think I'm right in saying that in the books, in the Game of Thrones books, some of the Northmen that like live on the coast or on the islands, they have like seal cloaks. They have like rain. They have basically like Stutterheim coats made out of like sea lions and stuff, because they're obviously a bit more in the weather, you know, in the rain and stuff. No, I'm fairly sure that's true, that they sort of wear like animal skins and things like that to keep all that off them.
Yeah, and it's ominous, isn't it? You know, it's the car breaking down outside the spooky haunted house kind of scene, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, like
Vhagar,
you say,
just looming in the background.
Jesus Christ, that dragon is so big.
Because also, this is just a quick note. We've actually never seen Storm's End on Game of Thrones, even though the Baratheons were big house. Oh. That location's never been on screen before, which is really cool. So I loved seeing it because I've never seen it before. And obviously it's very close to Dragonstone, but it's in Crownlands, right? Really sort of rough, intense looking place. And that's, you know, Robert Baratheon and these sort of burly lads forged from the environment that they grew up on. So, but as soon as we saw Vhagar, it was just terrifying.
Was like,
he's
fucking
huge.
Oh my God. Huge, just like, man. I mean, I know that it's not real and I know it's not even there, but just the enormity and the scale of it compared to Arrax was just like, it was terrifying. It was far more than Godzilla or King Kong.
Well, it reminded me of those new Godzilla movies, actually. Those really sort of washed out colors. It was also like, it was very prehistoric. I think what was really heart in mouth though, was there was a feeling that Rhaenyra had a smart strategy to like get some of these lords won over. And then you realize Otto's played them. He's got there first. He's got there with a big dragon, because he probably knew that they wouldn't send one of their bigger dragons anyway. So you've got the big lad there. And Luke goes inside, meets Boris Baratheon. Is it Bormund? Boris? I can't remember his name, sorry.
Boris is a good name. We'll call him Boris.
Boris Baratheon. And finds out, first of all, that he's not particularly hospitable. He's not very pleased to see him. And rather than deliver like a message, which is, you know, come to heel, Aemond has actually offered his hand in marriage, and he's brought far more substantial words with him. So it just sours immediately. And it's really hard to tell, is this guy friend or foe? Is Luke safe?
Do you think it was purely because Aemond had got there first, or would the reaction have always been like that? Do you think they've overestimated their importance, or the like you say? I think that's one of the key messages throughout the whole episode, was how much is your word worth?
Yeah, you know? I think it's the way. I think sending Aemond, who is also wants to marry one of his daughters, is really smart, right? That's you got this dashing guy, big dragon, which is quite scary, and then you go, marry into our family, we'll look after you. By contrast, you've got Luke turning up being like, my mum says she needs you to really be good on that claim that your ancestors made 20 years ago. He's a bit like,
please. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they referred like asking him to bark like a dog. It's clearly, I guess it's to show us that Rhaenyra is not the political operator or the savvy politician that Otto is. Yeah. Basically.
I mean, it's like you said, she's purely born from, she's not there to govern. She's there to live out a prophecy. So, and this just kind of adds weight to that, doesn't it, really? That she's not really spent much time trying to second guess what people are thinking or what they might feel. She's just quite literally black and white or black and green about the whole thing.
They're quite insulted when he's like, oh yeah, I'm actually betrothed. So like, you can't, even if I was going to come here to, like, I can't be married off. I've already done that. Yeah. So it's just difficult. And obviously, you know, Rhaenyra has more kids, so she could have factored that in. But, you know, it's just been so hasty, and they're on the back foot, really, in terms of getting the word out. So, it just, the mood drops, right? It's really, really tense. And you just think, Aemond out for blood. He wants an eye.
There was a red wedding moment there. There was a bit of the sleeve revealing the armor there, wasn't it? It was just like, oh shit, mate, you are now in some serious danger. When the Baratheons told him to fuck off, and there's that little fella there, yeah. little hobbit lad, just all on his own. It was okay. Oh god.
Before he runs, we see
the eye, which was just fucking great. Oh, he pulls back the eye patch.
The really cool thing about having a blue gem in his eye, it honestly, he made me think of the Night King. He just looked like, because of that blue eye, I was like, exactly. Oh, it's really chilling. Exactly. It's really chilling. Yeah, yeah. But he wants an eye. And I mean, I watched that whole thing thinking he wants to kill Luke. It's only at the very end of the episode, which we'll get to, that I realized he's just trying to bully him.
Yeah,
right.
I think he's just, because if you remember when he was, the episode where they went on the side missions with their Shoreditch hats on and trying to find Aegon, Aemon is very kind of like procedural. He knows what's right. He knows what's expected of him. He doesn't agree with the fact that Aegon is the king. He thinks it should be him because he's learned High Valyrian. He's learned how to do this. He's learned all of the bows and the curtsies and all of that. So he knows that to actually do anything to Luke would have given him way to his emotions rather than what's right for the house, I think.
And it's such a show of strength to just intimidate him. And you know, these kids are younger than Aegon and Aemon, right? They can really inflict sort of generations of trauma on this family by just toying with them. But that's only after seeing the end. I was like, oh yeah, he's just fucking with him. That whole, I thought as soon as he landed at Storm's End, I was like, that kid's not coming out alive. Like, they're going to betray him. It's a trap. So it's kind of interesting when it gets to the chase that it was an accident. But yeah, he runs away, and that scene of him running to the dragon was in the trailer for this episode. So we sort of, I didn't quite realize it was Luke. I didn't know who it was. And it's an amazing, amazing like aerial battle. It sort of reminded me of something from Star Wars, because Araxes kind of moves so fast and agile. He's like a little X-wing. And then you've got this big mothership.
Just the shadow coming at, it's like, it's a bit like, you know, kind of Moby Dick, kind of like going underneath the boat. It was Jesus Christ.
There are like whales or sharks, these creatures sometimes. And I think there was two shots. There's one where Vhagar goes underneath him, right? Like a Jaws or something. And there's another one where we see him from above. And it's such an astonishing sense of scale between the two dragons.
Yeah. It's like a jumbo jet going past someone on a hang glider, wasn't it?
It was on a drone. It's going past a drone or something.
On a drone. And just full credit to the CGI, to the stunt, to everything there, because I felt cold, I felt wet, I felt scared, I could feel the kind of wind, I felt kind of upended, and it was like, and kids that have been spoiled by CGI will not know what I'm talking about. Back when I was a kid, the only nearest thing you could get to like AI or anything like that was going to Alton Towers or a theme park, and you used to have to go and sit on the floor in a tent. In like a domed tent, and they would project the front of a roller coaster onto the ceiling in the front, and you would felt like you were in the roller coaster. Now, anyone that's got like a fucking Oculus now would just be like, "You old," but that is like the nearest I felt to it, because I was swaying and everything, and then it was just, I've never had so much hope from a tiny crack in the clouds as I have from that moment there, from when Luke saw that there was a break and that there was an exit from the storm, got through, and then it comes out of nowhere. And again, I'm going to reference something a little bit shit. Do you remember in Deep Blue Sea when Samuel L. Jackson gets snatched by that shark when he's giving that speech? It's exactly like that, because you just go, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
There was no toying around. There was no, it was immediate. It was just, he just
made it work as well was just how, particularly with Luke, it was obviously a CGI fight, but like it didn't feel like that, because I thought there was so much focus on him as this little boy in the storm trying to get
holding
home.
On. Yeah,
it felt like a real, like they really focused on the kid at the heart of it rather than like, oh, dragons. But we started to see both of the dragons sort of lose control. I don't know if you had the subtitles on, but
I did. Yes.
So I had the subtitles, but then also they translate the high. They're using High Valyrian, and they're both saying like, "Obey, obey, obey."
Calm down. And actually, it was Arax that went first, wasn't it?
With the fire, with the fire.
So Arax
did hit Vhagar on the side like pretty badly.
Yeah, and I mean, fair play to Arax. I mean, if you're going to go down fighting, probably not the best move because that was literally a red dragon to a dragon, wasn't it? The red rag to a bull. It was
just like, so one of my mates, my mate Mike, who actually does listen to the podcast, so hopefully he'll hear
Hey
this.
Mike!
He sent me this meme that was like, oh, my dog doesn't bite, he just wants to play. And then the dog is... Because the dragon is like absolutely ferocious, but you're like, oh, he's controlling the dragon. Like, this is going to be fine. And then no. He just chomps through Arax's neck. But no, I just thought that brief bit of respite where he clears through the storm and he's above the clouds and you think, oh, he's safe. And then he comes out of nowhere and goes through that dragon's neck like it's a carrot stick or something, right?
Yeah,
it was straight in.
It was brutal. And actually, for a second, I felt for Aemond because he was just like, oh shit, I've gone way too far now.
Yeah.
And that was the moment. Crazy. That moment, you know, there have been two moments within season one. There was the dream, and then the dream misunderstanding, and then this moment, and which can only mean that the Dance of the Dragons has begun. A wonderfully written and directed moment with Daemon walking into the hall, taking Rhaenyra by the hand and letting her and breaking the news to her. And the final shot mirroring young Rhaenyra doing exactly the same was just, the look on Emma Darcy's face was just fierce. It was just,
it was amazing.
Rage, terror, anger. It was just brilliant. It was just so, so good.
What I'm really intrigued about is Aemon going to sort of, is he going to be spin this? Because obviously the news has come that like the dragon had its neck ripped off. The boy fell into the water and died. Like, how
just
are they going to...
in half, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, you saw, bits of dragon just like falling through the sky. But yeah, I mean, it's war now. That's it. That was the, on the inside the episode, it's like Rhaenyra returns and it's like, right, we have to hit them. And I think it's really interesting that like Aemon didn't mean to do it. I think apparently in the books, it's a little, obviously because there's no witnesses, the intentions are a little bit harder to read. So framing it as an accidental act that claims a child and a dragon and ignites the whole thing really is a really interesting choice. But
yeah,
that's also like, you know, Aemon does look 38, but it's important to remember that he is supposed to be like 20 and he's young as well. He's green, literally, in a lot of ways. And so it's just spiraling. And I think both parties are just going to be completely thrown by how fast it's accelerating.
And if there was anyone's child he didn't want to kill, it would have been Daemon's, because those two have got beef anyway, haven't they? There's that simmering tension.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's going to be fantastic. Now, listen, we're going to get together in a few days' time and kind of talk about the future, what we think season two could like. I don't want to give the game away, but we have two very special guests lined up for that episode.
Very excited about that.
who will be able to give us some extremely good insight into where some of those characters and storylines may well be going. We don't know any more than you in terms of when season two is going to air. I'm sticking to my guns and I suspect it will be spring 2024, which sounds horrific. We've got a plan though, Chris, right? We've got a plan, which we'll talk about in the next episode, I think. We're gonna keep going is the answer. We had so many emails and likes, and I'm not just doing this in the same way that someone off Love Island says, for all those asking, this dress is from Pretty Little Thing. It's genuinely, we had so many people getting in touch asking us to keep going, and we are. I don't know if we're gonna do it weekly. That feels like it's quite a lot, but there are other series coming out that we do want to talk about. The Last of Us is coming out. out. Succession's coming out. There's, you know, I'm a big fan of his Dark Materials. There's, you know, there's all sorts. There's quite a few good shows coming up over the next kind of 12 months that I'm sure that Chris and I will enjoy talking about. And I'm sure there's cast and makers and whatnot that would love to have a chat to us too. So we're going to keep going. And we are also going to be delving back into the Thrones land, but in a slightly different way. We had people saying, oh, we should go back and do a complete rewatch of Thrones. I'm not sure I'm ready for that yet. I've lived 7 years deep entrenched in Game of Thrones land. I'm not sure I'm quite ready to go back and do an episode by episode breakdown of all 8 seasons of Thrones. But we're probably going to pick a choice, or maybe you're going to pick them for us. We'll find out. We'll work that out for the next episode. But Chris, if you could summarize season one, what would you say? You know, one thing that we did say that we're going to do later on is go back and revisit our first episode that we talked about before we'd seen any of it, and see either how right we were or more likely how wrong we were, and see if our feelings have changed, really. How are you feeling about it now?
Yeah, I'm feeling really devoed that it's over. Like, I'm just like, can't believe that's season one done. I mean, we were saying it doesn't feel like it's flown by. It feels like, because we get to do the podcast every week, like we're getting to really chew through it. I think it's been brilliant. I do think that the time jumps have made it hard to be really rooted in what's happening in a way that it's quite a unique season of television in that regard. But I think the thing that's anchored it is just amazing acting. And I think, you know, just kind of with our backgrounds, like one thing that we have on our side is that the potential for this to get even better is there. And I think that's what excites me, definitely. So I think season two is, you know, I've always said this before, because, you know, a lot of people will know this, but I do write about telly quite a lot. And one thing that you never want is for the best season to be the first season, because you have nowhere to go. So I'm just really excited about, we've got such a brilliant sort of powder keg of a first season. It's ended spectacularly. And I just can't wait to see how it builds from there. And I think it's just going to be brilliant to watch. So I think it's great. And I think also, I would say it feels really different to Game of Thrones. I think the central problems and the central issues and things that it's dealing with are very different. And I think that is what makes it so much fun to watch. It doesn't feel like a rehash of anything.
First and foremost, like a lot of people, I feel relief that it was good. and I didn't realize how much I'd missed the world until it started again. I was so exhausted at the end of Thrones that I was quite happy for it to kind of like be rested and to go off and watch other things. And then it seemed to come back quite quickly. How's the dragon, you know, and you know, it went really quickly, but it seemed to arrive quite quickly as well. I think from this, we were talking about it the other day, from the first photos that we saw on the beach in Cornwall to actually sitting watching the first episode, actually felt like quite a short space of time. I know we had a bit of a pandemic to be dealing with as well, but it's very difficult to think of any missteps. I can't think of anything that was bad, really. The casting was incredible. I guess the time jumps were contentious for a lot of people and unsettling and quite discombobulating. But like we say, I don't really see any other way they could have got to where they got in episode 10 without having done all of that, because we would never have had the relationship between Alicent and Rhaenyra as children. We wouldn't have understood really the Rhaenys' relationship to Rhaenyra. We wouldn't have got why Alicent, and you know, the whole, there was no other way of doing it in such a short space of time. And I don't think, you know, and I think if that had gone the other way and we'd have still, episode 10 would have been, I don't know, Otto leave. Yeah, like the first time jump, people have been like, nothing's happened.
Yeah. I think the big thing to wrestle with is that, like, they couldn't do the slow burn thing that Game of Thrones did, because no one makes telly that is 8 seasons long anymore. That is an institutional change. And I think we talked about this a bit last week after we finished recording, that, like, you're never going to get that. So what you're getting instead, this is the best version of what you liked about Game of Thrones. Yes, it is a bit quicker. It's jumping around a little bit. We're not getting we're not going to get like a whole season or 2 seasons of young Rhaenyra and Alicent.
Yeah.
That's just how telly's made now. You just don't get that. So, you know, bearing that in mind, I think it's been so successful at what it's done. And the viewing figures are through the roof. I think the interest in the cast is amazing. What we were saying was, like, also just can't wait to see who joins season 2. I think there'll be some really good castings, and I can't wait.
We'll delve into that in a future episode, because as things stand, we've had chats with people. No one knows anything. There is no, you know, I'm sure that Ryan is already writing it. I'm sure that writing is happening, but there's certainly been no plans for when it's being shot, when casting's going to be done. None of that. We're still way off. And I would imagine a lot of that is down to waiting to see what the reaction is, even though the second season was commissioned, was greenlit just before the premiere aired. I think they still waited to see just what was working, because that's the beauty of something like this. It is fluid, and actors and characters that have resonated more will be lifted up in future seasons as well, in the same way that someone like, I don't know, Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad was only supposed to be around for kind of like 3 or 4 episodes, you know. Who's been your standout? I know, a tough one. If you were in charge of the Emmys, who's your Emmy going to? I'll give you one. I'll give you one. You can have one principal, one supporting.
Okay, so best, I think Paddy Considine has to be best lead. I think he anchored the show. And I think the part of the restlessness that you feel in the last couple of episodes is because you haven't got that sort of that presence there anymore. I thought Paddy was amazing. Obviously, a little bit biased, but I thought he was great. Supporting, I think, is Emma Darcy. And I think part of that is because I actually think what Rhaenyra has to do this season is a little bit more complicated than Alicent. Alicent is very like high energy, intense, you know, breaking point. Rhaenyra has been doing something a little bit murkier, which is having to balance like this passive energy with this anger. And I think especially the last 2 or 3 episodes, Emma Darcy's just been really outstanding. And I think even with no words in that final closing moments of season 1, reacting to the news about Luke's death, I just thought were amazing. What would yours be?
It's difficult to argue with that, actually. I thought Olivia Cooke was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, probably, Olivia has been amazing.
We knew Olivia was amazing. Emma, for me, has been amazing. And I just found them so mystic. And every scene that they were in, I was quite scared of them.
They've got a very ethereal quality, and very sort of fascinating to watch.
And just in this episode as well, just how motherly Rhaenyra was and how tender she was, Rhaenyra, as in she was. The little finger stroking Luke's hand, the kind of like almost doing the collar and spitting on a handkerchief and sending him off was just incredible. And I just found Emma's performance just to be really odd, and I mean odd in the best sense, completely the best sense. So for me, it would be them, definitely.
Who are you looking forward to seeing more of in season 2? That's in the cast.
That's a difficult one, really, because I think the obvious ones, I'm looking forward to seeing more of Aemond. I'm looking forward to seeing more of Larys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing where Otto takes us.
Yeah.
I think I'm looking forward to seeing, like you, seeing the new ones. I think I don't think we've seen all of the main players yet.
Yeah.
Or certainly all, I think there's going to be some incredible casting done, like you said. So I'm not entirely sure, but I think all of the characters that are there now are kind of are pretty obvious ones to kind of like. I'm not sure there's a Sneaky Pete that I'm kind of like, oh, I think they're going to be great. Phil Daniels maybe is going to do something. I don't know. It's difficult to tell. Difficult to tell. Maybe one of the very young bastards is going to come along and just be astounding.
Yeah. I definitely feel like I didn't get as much Risa fans that I thought I would. I'm looking forward to more Otto, but I really want to see, I think that Harry Collett, who plays Jace, I think is, I'd love him to have more to do. I read that he was in, he played Billy Elliot in the West End, and he has a bit of a Jamie Bell, Tom Holland.
That is kind of, the path to success, isn't it? Just getting to Billy Elliot.
It is. It's the incubation station for young actors. And also Tom Glyn Carney, who plays Aegon II. We got some really great bits from him last week. And I think he's such a complex, vile person who's also tormented. And I'm really excited to see
him. He looks the most fun to play, I would say. I think it must be great being Aemond, because you just get to be an absolute prick. It's just great.
Yeah. So I can't wait. There's actually an interview with Ryan Condal on Variety this morning that says they're filming in spring.
Well, this year? Wow.
It's spring 23. It's probably going to be 2024, but he won't confirm that it's not end of next year.
I can't see it being end of next year.
I can't either, but...
Ryan, you can't clash with I'm a Celebrity, mate. Can't be done. True. There's only so much... There's only so much drama as Brits can take, you know.
One show involves shallow has-beens fighting for attention, and the other one...
Hey! Ah, dear. Well, listen, Chris, what an absolute pleasure. What an absolute pleasure it's been. I feel as though I just want to have a quick look on our YouTube channel and see, read out some of the comments that have come through. We had some great ones. I apologize in advance that my dog, I didn't realize Floyd the dog was sat with his bollocks hanging out, or what's left of his bollocks anyway, hanging out throughout the episode. So apologies. He's generated a bit of a fan on there. But Powder Ground said, was really happy. This podcast reached new heights in its dissecting of House of the Dragon. To spend 5 minutes analyzing Larys cracking one out over Alicent's feet was superb. Thank you very much. Not only was it funny, found myself nodding along and thinking, yep, that makes sense. I'd probably have done that too if I was him. See, that's what we're here for. Tormund Giant's Brain said, I was blown, and this is in reference to episode 9, I was blown away by the details in the coronation. It felt like watching Nicholas II being crowned in an orthodox ceremony with all the hollow pomp and circumstance of a rotting system. Ooh. Oh, yes. Loads of comments. Oh my goodness me, we did have a lot of them as well. One question that we're asking with the Apnabidu King Eric said, the people who burnt the White Worms building were Larys Clubfootstrong's tongueless men, as he mentioned when exchanging the feet information for information and service. There we go.
Yeah, we did miss that last week, didn't we? Didn't quite.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't pick up on that at all. So we had a lovely email from Lewis. Thank you very much for your email. Lewis says, hi, Jamie, Chris and team. Here's some suggestions on how we can keep going. Character-based episodes around Thrones or House of the Dragon, almost like a mini wisdom based solely on one character like Ned, or even a place such as Winterfell and what it's seen over the years. That's a good idea. You could do like a whole episode on like Ned or that. That's, yeah. You know what?
Deep dives.
Lewis, that's a great idea. And then he's also put rewatching certain Thrones episodes, could do a poll on Twitter to establish what the top 10 episodes are and do a show based on them. That is not a bad shout. Oh, Barry Sanderson got in touch as well. Hey, Barry, thanks for emailing in. As we often said, no shot wasted. Did we notice that a pan shot from the throne in episode 9 showed us Viserys' sword already in the throne? Did you notice that, Chris? I think it was in the back.
No, I didn't notice that.
I think it was in the back. I think it was in the back of the throne.
That
there was
like such a
good level of detail.
Wow.
He's also said, but it didn't look soldered in. I noticed that it didn't look like it had been welded in. It looked like it had just been kind of like shoved in there whilst they were waiting. You know, like when you win a cup and you have to wait for your name to be engraved on it. So yeah. Barry's suggesting that maybe his daughter may claim it. And he's put here, thoughts for filling the next couple of years till House of the Dragon 2, sexy socks? Oh, sexy socks. Ah, he's thinking of Larys. Looking back on old thrones.
Right.
Pulling out House of the Dragon references. There we go.
That would be like all the Easter eggs. Mm. My only worry about that is that we might end up spoiling what happens in the Dance of the Dragons, because they do reference it. They didn't know when they did Game of Thrones that they would be a TV show based on some of this stuff. But there are references. Could be interesting though.
Yeah.
I kind of think there's no such thing as a spoiler these days, in the sense that this is all written about in source material. Mm. It's also all, I'm like, yeah.
I think if we played the speech that Joffrey gave just before he died now, we'd lose a lot of listeners.
We would. We would indeed.
I don't think anyone needs
to hear that. I think it's interesting. I'm trying to go in with an open mind, and like, you know, like I said, I sort of knew some stuff about this episode, but watching it is something else.
That's been brilliant.
And ditto with Paddy. I knew he was going to die that episode when I met him. But seeing it is something else. But yeah.
It's great.
However you take your spoilers, I think it's been a great show to watch.
Yeah, abso-flippin-lutely. Now, to celebrate the fantastic season finale of House of the Dragon, my good friend at HarperCollins Publishers in the UK, hello Natasha, have sent us some amazing giveaways to give to you guys as prizes for listening to Dragoncast and supporting us. We have got, let's have a look, we've got George R.R. Martin, The World of Ice and Fire, the brand new book co-written with Elio and Linda, which is a kind of like compendium of all things House of the Dragon. It's full of spoilers, I would imagine. There's the book, also full of spoilers, George R. R. Martin's book, Fire and Blood, which is where House of the Dragon is getting all of its stuff from. And then we've also got a huge box set of all of the Game of Thrones books written by George, including, well, all of them really, Feast of Crows, Dance of the Dragons, blah, blah, blah. All of them are there. And I would really very much like to give you one of those. And all you've got to do to win one is either comment below on the YouTube or send us a comment on Twitter at dragoncast_pod. You've got to follow us as well, though. And answer the following question. What fantasy TV show did George R. R. Martin write before he'd even written any Game of Thrones books? Give you a clue. It was a Disney adaptation. Okay? Once you've got the answer, go to @dragoncast_pod. Send us a little tweet, follow us as well. Same for YouTube. Subscribe to the channel and send an answer in the comments. I'll pick one and I'll DM you and we will get these out to you straight away. And finally, we've got a whole long list of people to say thank you to. I know it must seem like it's just me and Chris just make this magic happen. And as much as we'd like to take credit for, we could just take credit. We won't take credit for it. A whole bunch of people have helped us out here. And we just wanted to say, as we're at the end of the House of the Dragon season, big shout out to Connor, who's our producer, who's been faithfully doing the notes and writing the wisdoms. He also works on Thronecast as well, and he couldn't be with us today. Otherwise, we'd get him on mic to say hello. But he's actually over at Sky with Sue, recording the Enter of the House of the Dragon episode that's going out after the evening show and the finale tonight. I've already recorded my bits and pieces. There's some good wisdoms. There's a good wisdom coming your way, another dragon based one coming your way there. So if you haven't seen that, go and check it out. It'll be on Sky On Demand or on Now On Demand too. There's also another Connor with two N's. Connor Driscoll, the producer, has one N. Connor Norcott has two N's, and he edits all of the YouTube videos. So hey, Connor, thank you very much, Connor. Thank you for doing this. And then the poor sausage that has to edit all the audio for the audio podcasts is Buddy Peace. Thank you to Buddy. He's been brilliant as well. And then behind the scenes, organising all of our interviews with Paddy and interviews further to come as well, has been the fantastic Megan McLeod from HBO, along with Tilly. We both love Megan, don't we, Chris?
Huge fans.
Big fan of Megan. Cast her for season two, please. She is. She would be HBO would be nowhere without Megan and Tilly leading the fray. So thank you so much for all your help, guys, and also at Sky as well to Zai. Thanks Zai for your support. Thanks to all the Transistor pals who make Thronecast. Thanks to Rachel and all of the Sky marketing and PR team for not telling me I couldn't make Dragoncast whilst being on Thronecast. But last but not least, Chris, babes, thank you.
Oh, I didn't know I was getting a mention.
Of course you're getting a mention.
Yeah, thank you for leading the charge. Very, very happy to be here.
It's been fun. And we started this. It was a bit of a last minute idea to do this, and I've been bowled over by the success of it. The listeners, the figures have reflected how popular the show is, as all great spin-off shows do, and every episode has had more and more and more and more listeners. We've been number one for most of our run. Apologies, Commode. Apologies to the official HBO podcast. But you know what? You don't do a spin-off like the Brits do. Come and see us for season two.
Yeah.
Also, a massive thank you to everybody that appeared on Dragoncast as a guest. We really, really punched above our weight. Could not believe so many cool people came on to speak to us. So right from the top, Elio and Linda, thank you very much. Terry White, Ricky Hayward-Williams, Ian Beattie, Matt Edmondson, Sue Perkins, my TV sister, Gavin Stokes, of course, the wonderful Paddy Considine, and just last week, Mr. Al Murray. All of them absolutely fantastic human beings, and you should support them in every single endeavour with which they do. So thank you all. If you've been listening, keep on listening. We'll be back in maybe later on this week, maybe early next week. We'll see with news and speaking to a few more people, because House of the Dragon is going to be available on DVD and Blu-ray and all of that stuff. So there's a whole swathe of promo being done for that, which we are very happy to dragon back. But Chris, until then, Dracarys, my friend, Dracarys.
Until then.
Don't forget House of the Dragon airs exclusively on Sky Atlantic at 2 a.m. every Monday, then repeats that same evening at 10. You can also get it on demand via Now. If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, produced by Connor Driscoll, edited by Buddy Peace, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.